My name is Gilda Miros. This is Saturday, March 10th, 2018. We are at the Actors Fund office, and I will be speaking with Bernie Rochel and recording his oral history. I was impressed that as a child, you would do imitations of Johnny Ray.
Yes. What happened was I heard him on the radio, and I thought it was a girl singing, and I asked my sister who she was, and my sister Judy said, "It's a guy." I said, "Wow." I said, "This guy's really incredible."
How old were you?
I was 11. Yeah. And she said, "I'll get you some of his songs. Cry, The Little White Cloud That Cried." And as soon as I got the LPs at that time, I would play them, and I watched them on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I just really took to him because he was so unique, so different. And I started to impersonate him. In a living room, I would, you know, put on his songs, Walking My Baby Back Home, Cry, The Little White Cloud That Cried, and I just loved doing it. And I would break down and cry every time I did The Little White Cloud That Cried, because the lyrics related very strongly to my own life. And
was this in New York?
Yes.
Where?
I grew up in Washington Heights. 193rd and Broadway, right by Fort Tryon Park. Yeah.
Before this, did you perform?
No, but I always wanted to act. That's what I really wanted to do. I saw Montgomery Clift in The Search, and I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and I said, "Wow, I want to do this. I want to act."
The first actor in the family.
Yes.
After crying with Johnny Ray, what happened?
Well, I was on a show in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, called The Tony Grant Show. It was a kid's show. It was the summer of 54, like June 54, and Tony invited me to come to Atlantic City and do the Tony Grant Show there impersonating Johnny Ray. So in July, I went down there with my mother. I was like 14, I probably was. And I was doing the Johnny Ray impression. I guess Johnny had heard about it, and he came in to see me. And afterwards, he took me by the hand into the main room where he was performing, and invited me to do the impression of him. So there was a comic MC named Bobby Sargent, and he would bring me on with Ladies and Gentlemen, The Million Dollar Teardrop, Mr. Emotion, Johnny Ray, and I come out and do Walking My Baby Back Home. And the audience really took to it. They really did. And Johnny said to me that he loved the performance, the imitation, because it didn't make fun of him. It was a sincere performance.
Wonderful.
He was really an incredible person to work for, very sensitive, just gave his all on stage. And there's one very funny thing that happened. He used to jump up in the air for his bow and wind up on his knee, so I would do that. And at one performance, I wound up in the orchestra pit in the drummer's seat because I lost my balance on stage. And the people in the audience were laughing. They all thought it was part of the performance, but of course it was.
Well, that summer also, I auditioned for the Ted Max Amateur Hour impersonating Johnny, and I was on his show that summer. Unfortunately, I couldn't see it because in those days, you couldn't see a playback or that kind of a thing, but I understand it went really, really well.
How did you get ahead? Did you have an agent? Did you have somebody that helped you?
No, not at that point. I was doing it all myself, and, I got held over for one more week at the Steel Pier working with Frankie Lane.
And they paid you for this?
Yes.
That's amazing.
So it was really a very exciting. That was really my first professional gig.
How old were you then?
14, yeah. So it was very exciting. My mother was really thrilled.
You had her permission and everything.
Oh, yeah. She was with me for the weeks that I was there because I was so young, you know. And so all that really went really well. And then, of course, I was in high school at the time. So I had to finish all my studies and everything. But I began studying acting when I was 14 at the Henry Street Playhouse. I studied with Bill Hickey.
Now, how did that happen? From Washington Heights downtown.
Downtown. Well, I asked my parents. I said I really wanted to study acting, and I had a very intense program. I went to Yeshiva, Yeshiva High School, and 186 on Amsterdam Avenue. And I asked them if I could, you know, take acting lessons, and they said, well, Saturday is the only day that you would be free, because Sunday I was in school. So Saturday I would schlep down to...
By yourself?
Yeah, yes. I would take the subway down to the Henry Street Playhouse, and there were like 16, 17 of us, and study with Bill Hickey, and do scenes on stage, and he was an excellent teacher. And we would do improv and all that kind of a thing, and I just loved it. I couldn't wait for Saturday. I mean, I just enjoyed it so much. The very first scene I ever did was with Rochelle Oliver, who was a wonderful actress. She was in Miss Daisy, and we did a scene from Maxwell Anderson's Winter Set. And I remember Bill Hickey saying he wanted us to go onto the Brooklyn Bridge to do the scene, to get the feel of it, so that would become, because he would always say, actors become. You're in the scene, you're totally in the scene. So I walked with Rochelle. It was a brutally cold day. We could see the vapors coming out of our mouth, you know, our breath. And when we brought it back to class, it really, really went well, because we had that whole feeling of the cold, and had a great teacher. And then Bill suggested, when I was about 18, that I audition for Uta, Uta Hata HB, which I did, and I studied with her, and that was really good. But
you were working also, studying and working?
I wasn't working, no. It was more back to school. The next time I really, really worked was when I went to Israel in 1959. I went as an exchange student. Well, I went as an exchange student for 6 months from Yeshiva University to study in Jerusalem. And about 2 months into it, I used to go to this club called The Cave in Jerusalem.
By yourself you traveled?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was 19 at that time. And I went into The Cave, and I would watch performers and stuff. And one day I went over to the owner, and I said to him, I'd like to audition for you, if you don't mind. And he said, sure. And I said, well, I do this lip-syncing act where I do impressions of singers like Little Richard, Jackie Wilson, Johnny Ray. He said, bring it in. Do about 15 minutes for me. So I had the records with me, and I went in one night. I did about 15 minutes, and the audience went wild. They went crazy. It was very, very physical. The act is very physical, everything I did, because if you knew Jackie Wilson and Little Richard, they were all over the place, and Johnny Ray, the same thing. So he started to book me there in The Cave, the owner. And I would work 3-4 times a week. I said, this is incredible. The guy's paying me. I'm working here. So I dropped my...
And yet you were not a singer.
I was a singer, but I thought that they had never seen anything like this before. So I was introducing something brand new, because Jerry Lewis had started with that in the 40s when he worked with Dean Martin. He had introduced lip-sync. So I started to do that, and he had a band there also. And I said, you know, I could alternate. I could do the lip-syncing, and I could sing, and then, you know, they may not know, you know, is he singing, is he not singing, that kind of thing. So it went really well. Soldiers would come in, you know, Israeli soldiers and young girls. And
it was a novelty.
Yes. It was something different, unique, they had never seen. And you also have to remember, it's a new country. Founded in 48, this is 1959. So it's a whole different thing.
Where did you live there?
I lived in Jerusalem in a dormitory place, you know, in the school and everything. But then, and I have big family also, and so I would visit them, you know, from time to time. But here's what happened. One day, Marcel Marceau came into the club, and I have a lot of pictures with him and stuff like that. And he said to me, after he saw the performance, would you like to study mime with me in Paris? Well, I was 19, and I figured I had college to finish. My parents would probably go crazy. They would want me to finish. So I didn't have that confidence in myself. I guess that's the word. And I just said, thank you so much. Appreciate it, but I really have to finish my studies and graduate and things like that. But these three agents came in, called Amar Gan, which in Hebrew was the agency. They saw me perform, and they took me on. And what happened was I started to perform all over the country in all these different venues, movie theaters, amphitheater in Tel Aviv, that kind of a thing, and doing the lip syncing and singing with a band, so that the audience never really knew, is he really singing, is he not singing, that kind of thing. And eventually I really became like a name, a household name in Israel. They would plaster my picture in Tel Aviv, you know, on the billboards, because that's the way they are. So this went on for several months, and I got my own apartment in Tel Aviv. Well, I was sharing it with a cousin of mine, and dropped my studies completely. Knew I was going to lose a year of college. And for the second half, I auditioned for a film called I Like Mike with Topol. In those days, his name was Chaim Topol. And I landed a role in that movie, a small role, a comedy directed by the Canadian director Peter Fry. But at the same time, they were putting together, my agents were telling me, a show called Israel 1960. This was in January of 60. And they wanted me to headline with Leo Fuld, who was the biggest thing, you know, in the Jewish field at the time. So we performed, we would do a show in Eilat, okay, for the soldiers. And then we'd get on our Kia Airlines and fly back to Tel Aviv. We did 7-8 shows a week all over the country, small towns and everything. And this I did right through the summer. And now, in my mind, I planned on staying in Israel, not going back home. But my parents called. My mother was very upset. Family in Israel. And I will never forget, this is the most interesting story of my stay there. One of the biggest singers who passed away 3 years ago was Arik Einstein, who was the Paul Simon of Israel. And Arik and I were sitting in Cafe Noga in Tel Aviv. That's where you got your jobs and everything. And my uncle came in. And he went over to the table where I was sitting with Arik, and he said, Arik, in Hebrew he said this, which I spoke fluently, please tell Bernie to go home. And Arik said, why should he go home? He's very successful and he has a lot of friends. And when I went back with my wife in 63 again performing, my Uncle Moody reminded me, he says, remember what Arik Einstein said when I came in? I said, yes, Moody, I remember it very well. So even there, the performers wanted me to stay and that kind of a thing. And it was just wonderful. But in August, I did go home at the end of August or the beginning of September 60, and I finished my studies. I lost a full year of college, but it was worth it. You know, when I got back to the States, I had all these mixed feelings because I really wanted to live there. I spoke the language fluently. I just was having a ball. It was really terrific.
You were bilingual.
Well, yeah, I did know Hebrew before I went, but I really learned the language because I insisted on speaking Hebrew. Most Israelis know English, but I would talk Hebrew to them all the time. Even if they responded in English back, I would talk, you know, in Hebrew. So I really was thinking a lot of times in Hebrew, which means you really know the language. I had a couple of days on the film. It really worked out really well. It was a hit in the country, but you have to understand also that Israel was a new country, so cinema was new. Film was new, and even though we shot it at a studio in Tel Aviv, it's not like we would go today and see Israeli films, which are up for the Academy Award or that kind of thing, Eitan Fox with Walk on Water, things like that. Most of the films I was doing were pretty rough, you know, very low budget, really low budget. But it was a hit in Israel. It never made it out of Israel. But it was a very good experience for me because I had never done a film before.
So. And you came back successful.
Yes, yes. And coming back successful also I had mixed feelings because I thought that when I came back to America, everything was going to fall into place as far as, you know, show business went. And, of course, it didn't because it didn't matter what I did over there. You know, I think it's different if you make it in a country like England or you make it in France. You have the next step to make a career in the United States. But in a country like Israel, at that time, which was a new country, not really fully developed yet, it was much more difficult. So basically what I did was finish my studies. I really devoted myself to school.
What did you study?
I majored in English. I love to read. I always used to tell students that I was not a good student in school because school didn't seem to interest me much, but I always had my head in a book. I was reading Roth, I was reading Bellow, I was reading all the great writers, Joyce, and I just loved reading plays. Shakespeare, when I was 11 and 12, I would read, I would try to do the monologue from Mark Antony's speech, Friends, Romans, Countrymen, loved all of that. And I was very lucky that I seemed to understand Shakespeare, especially the tragedies that I worked on, Hamlet or Macbeth. I really understood what I was reading, for the most part. So I majored in English, but with the intention of course, continuing the acting. And in 1963, I graduated college in 62. I should have graduated in 61, but remember, I lost the year. In 63, I had met my wife in 62.
What college?
Yeshiva University, the only Hebrew university in the United States. So I went from the high school, 186th at Amsterdam Avenue, to the college, same area. Okay. And, oh, by the way, this is important. Two of the English professors that I had were Chaim Potok, who wrote The Chosen, my favorite book of all time, Herman Wouk. So these were two of my professors, and of course they really were influences on me. You know.
How did you meet your wife?
I met my wife at City College. I was taking an education class. I didn't know what I was going to do to like make a living so that I could pursue the acting. And she was in the class, and I liked her right away. You know, I saw her, and we would have lunch together, but I didn't think she'd go out with me. I thought she'd think I was nuts, you know, the theater thing. And she said she was fascinated because Friday, a kid who went to yeshiva would go up to the Catskill Mountains. He had his luggage, and he would be performing in different hotels up in the Catskills. That's what I was performing up there. In those days, the Catskills were really hot. You had like 400 hotels up there. So I would do small hotels, bungalows, things like that. I had my own nightclub act. This was totally different. I would imitate Johnny Ray, but I also did Bernie Rochelle. In other words, I would do standard songs like that. And I had like a 40-minute, 45-minute act. And so after we got married, I suggested that we go to Israel on a honeymoon for the summer. Without telling her that in my mind, my objective was to live there permanently, to perform. So we went to Israel in 63, and again, I was picked up by my agents, and I'm performing around the country, my wife's with me. But at the end of the 10 weeks, I said to her, isn't this great, Judy? Isn't this fabulous? Don't you want to live here? And she said, not really. And I said, why is that? And she said, well, it's a new country. How are you going to make a living here? You could get played out very fast. You speak the language fluently. You're comfortable. I'm not that comfortable. So we went home, and that was it. Well, we went back to the States, and my wife was a special ed teacher in elementary school, and I thought I would take the teaching test. It would be something for me to do while I pursue the acting. And I wound up in a junior high school in Queens. It was pre-training for Vietnam. You know, they don't send you to Vietnam if you can handle junior high school. That's the toughest age, 12, 13, and 14. But I got good training there. I was there for a couple of years. And then I began teaching in high school, Long Island City High School over the 59th Street Bridge. I was hired to direct the school productions. And I directed Fiorello there, I directed The Fantastics, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And a lot of the, I started to teach English and theater, but eventually they gave me a complete theater arts program, so I was like in seventh heaven, I loved it.
Now, you were always dreaming about?
The acting. First I thought singing, but then the acting bug really, really hit me. And while I was still teaching, of course, I would audition for things. I'd go up to Equity and that kind of thing. And I landed a off-Broadway show called The Pocket Watch in 1967, written by Alvin Aronson. And then he wrote a second piece similar to that, following the career of the waiter in that play. And that was called Nighthawks. So those were done on Theater Row. And remember, I'm still teaching, of course, because I'm not going to give up that. I'm going to have a family soon. I know I knew about that. And I continued to teach, continued to audition, did a few things. Jewish Rep, when Jewish Rep started, I did one of the first pieces there called Dancing in New York with Carol Rosenfeld.
Where was this performed?
That was at, Jewish Rep was on East 14th Street, at the YMHA on East 14th Street. And I also did a show, a review called An Evening with the Stars, a takeoff on the Catskill Performers at a cafe on the east side called the Bruges. We performed every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I was part of a comedy team called Black and Decker, like Martin and Lewis. We got rave reviews. We really did. And it went really, really well.
And you were still teaching?
Yes, still teaching. And I came to really enjoy the teaching. I love the classroom because when you're in a classroom, you're performing. What you're really doing is trying to motivate these kids, get them interested in Death of a Salesman at 7:30 in the morning. It is not the easiest thing in the world. And I just really enjoyed it very much. And plus directing the shows also. And I was doing a little here off Broadway, New York Theater Ensemble, doing a little directing there, doing some productions there.
And you had a family.
And I started to have a family. Yeah, my first daughter, Marlene, was born in 68. And so I really had much more responsibility at that point. My second daughter, Renee, was born in 1970. And I realized, hey, you know, I've got to make a living as well, as because everything in this business is tenuous. So I continued to teach, continued to audition. And
where did you live?
We lived in Queens. We lived in Forest Hills when we first got married. Then we moved to Casino Boulevard. It was a co-op. And then we went to Fresh Meadows where we bought a house. And that's where we raised our kids.
And always teaching and performing.
And performing, yeah.
How did you handle that?
It was tough. Of course, my mind was always on getting the next acting job and then also realizing that I couldn't leave New York, because I had all of this responsibility at home. So I was really trying to juggle two careers. And I think that it was good in a way, but it was also frustrating for me, because at some point I said, it's going to happen for me, and then I'll have to leave teaching, but I'm going to do what the passion is. And the passion was the acting.
Big break. TV, film.
TV. Summer of 81, All My Children. I was in an off-Broadway show at the time called Megan's Game on 42nd Street on Theater Row. I was the rabbi. Had a beard, a full beard. And Marvin Starkman came, the agent, and he spoke to me afterwards. He said, you know, I like you. You're a good character actor, but I don't know where to put you yet. But I will call you. 3 weeks later, he called and he said, you still have your beard? I said, yeah. He said, I'd like you to go over an audition at All My Children. They're looking for the character as a pornographer photographer. And his name is Stu Samuels. I went over an audition for the producer, and I think it was Meg Simon was the casting director. And I was hired. And it was a whole summer on the show, trying to get the main character, Kim Delaney's character, Jenny, into pornography. And I worked with her and opposite Sylvia Miles.
You left your job as a teacher.
Well, that's a good question. When I did leave, it was at that point, right after All My Children, because I said to my wife, this is it. This is the big break. I'm going to leave teaching now. I don't know for how long, but this is what I feel in my gut is going to happen. So right after All My Children, I said to my wife, this is it. I'm going to go out there, and guess what happened? Nothing. Nothing happened. And I wound up working as a waiter and as a supervisor in an Indian kosher restaurant for 2 years. Couldn't get work. Went to the Actors Fund, asked them to help me out, which they did. I never forgot them.
What year?
1982. Couldn't pay my mortgage, couldn't pay, you know, I was in not in good shape. And so I went back after 2 years to teaching full time again at the same high school. And got little bit parts in films and stuff like that, but nothing where I could say, this is it, and I'm going to move on. And I would say it went on like that for years and years. Little parts, a couple of shows here and there. And in 1994, after spending 25 years teaching, I retired. And I said, this is what I'm going to do full time. I'm going to act. I'm going to do theater. I'm going to do film. I can go out of town if I want because I don't have the responsibility. My kids are grown. That kind of thing.
Now, that was important, the responsibility.
Yeah, to me.
The family.
Yeah, to me, family and responsibility. I made choices in life. And to me, that was the most important thing, to have a family. And if you have a family, along with that goes responsibility. Show business is very tenuous. You don't know. You're making money 1 year. Next year, you are, you know, out in the cold. You're just struggling. So that was 1994. And I'll jump forward. I'm going to go to 2005. That's 11 years later. I remember in between I was doing little roles, day players in films and stuff like that. There was a call out by 40 Acres and a Mule, Spike Lee's company. They were looking for someone who could play an Orthodox Jew authentically. And the casting director was Kim Coleman. I called her. This was in April 2005.
You didn't have an agent?
I did. But I called her direct before. Yeah, I was with the Barbara Andreatis agency. I called Kim Coleman. I told her that I've been a student at Yeshiva, that I got to Yeshiva all my life. I'd like to come in and audition for this Orthodox man. She said, fine, I'll send you the sides, take a look at them, and I want you to come dressed as an Orthodox man. Went into the audition, read for her, and I added something at the end of one of the lines. One of the lines was, I said, sure, you could go nuts, go mishiga. I added that Yiddish word. I got a call back from Kim Coleman. She said, we'd like you to come back again. This was a few days later. And I walked in, and there's Spike Lee behind the monitor. I read, and he said, you did something last time. You're not doing it this time. I said, oh, he likes me. I know what he wants. I said, could I do the read again? He said, sure. I did it. He smiled. I walked out. 2 days later, I got a call to come in again. It was a Friday. I won't forget that. And he had me in for 3 minutes, in and out. For the next 3 weeks, I must have lost 15 pounds. I was like a wreck. And I was going to Barbara's office. My beeper went off. In those days, we didn't have the cell. You know, I had an answering service. And my beeper went off in the elevator, and I walked in, and Barbara said, did you get the message? I said, what's the message? You got the role. And it was just a real emotional experience for me. So I found out that not only did I get the role, but it was a co-starring role. I would be doing scenes with Denzel Washington. I would be in the entire film. The shoot was 8.5 weeks. I was on a movie 8 weeks. And it was just an incredible experience. The scenes that I did with Denzel were all improvised, and at one point in the scene where he's interrogating me, he says to me, what do you mean you don't hear? I said, I wear hearing aids. He says, yeah, show me, and I pulled out the hearing aids from my ears, and I knew Spike was going to keep this in the scene. And the next day, when I went into the bank to shoot a scene dressed as a Hasidic man, rabbi, teacher, Denzel was standing on the sidewalk by the bank, and he called me over, and he says to me, let me ask you something. You really wear hearing aids? I said, yeah, man, I can't hear without them. And he smiled, gave me a thumbs up. So we really had a wonderful time on the film, working with everybody. Clive Owen was terrific. You know, when you work with a terrific director who respects actors. It's terrific. I would go up to Spike and say, could I try this? And he'd say, sure. And if he liked it, he'd say, good, Bernard. And if he didn't, he'd say, Bernard, you gave me that. You got something else for me. Which was great. It was his sense of humor and everything. So it was just a very positive experience, the entire shoot. For me, this was an incredible validation of what I had been struggling with all my life as an actor. And I thought back to junior high school when I used to coach the kids to audition for the High School of Performing Arts, and I'm proud to say that several of them went on with careers in the business. Nancy Redman, comedian, worked Dangerfields for 15 years and had a terrific career. Tony Azito won the Tony Award for Pirates of Penzance, was a former student of mine, got him into the High School of Performing Arts. And Mel Johnson Jr., who we're still in touch with, who has done about 7-8 Broadway shows, films. And when I think about it, they all had that drive, the passion to do the business, to go through the struggles and stay with it. And I think that having taught kids, my experience is you're only going to do this business if you have the passion. If you say, I'm going to try this for 3 or 4 years, and if it doesn't work out, I'll do computers, you're setting yourself up for failure. This isn't a 3, 4, 5 year kind of time you're going to give yourself. It's a lifetime that you're going to give yourself. And even if you leave the business doesn't leave you. I know that sometimes I had that feeling where I wanted to leave, but I stayed with it because the passion was there and it was something that may sound a little, quirky or whatever the case might be, but I think God put me here for that reason.
You have had a mission.
Yes.
And you have transmitted your passion and your energy and your purpose to younger people. So it's wonderful validation as a performer and as a teacher.
Yes. I think that we're put here to make a difference.
That's wonderful to have the emotion and recognize it, Bernie. Because you are happy with yourself.
Yes.
And that is true happiness.
Mm-hmm. That is. And you said it succinctly. If you're happy with yourself, and you know what you're doing, you have a purpose in life, that's the most important thing. I think when you get up in the morning and you know what you're going to do and you enjoy what you do, that's the key. Any profession, if you're a doctor, a lawyer, whatever, you've got to get up in the morning with that, I want to do this. I can't do anything else because this is my passion. This is my love. This is my life.
How is your life now?
It's good. You know, I'm still out there. I'm always looking for the next job, but I know there's something around the corner. There will be something. And when I look back on my life, I always say that show business, my personal life, all of this is, there was a purpose for all of this. And I don't really have any regrets. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do the same thing. Maybe just a little bit differently. But not too much. I think I was very lucky that early on in life I had decided that I would do something that I would really, really enjoy, or I wasn't going to do it at all.
Since you love books, are you planning on writing your story, your biography?
Yeah, sometimes I think about it. I think it's pretty interesting. My wife says, you know, my God, you've had to, you know, between your career and different things that you did, you should really write something. It would be very interesting. I do think about that, yes. And maybe I will put it down at some point. I'd like to. It's an interesting life. I went through a lot of different things, yeah.
Do your children act?
Well, that's interesting. My oldest daughter, Marlene, sang. She used to write songs and stuff. She worked at MTV for a long time and enjoyed it up to a point, and then decided to go into Jewish studies. She went to the Jewish Theological Seminary, and she got a degree, and that's what she does now. But she sings also in the synagogue with little kids. You know, she teaches them songs and stuff. So she really loves what she does. And my youngest daughter, Renee, worked for Jim Henson, worked for the Muppets for years. And she worked for Jane Henson. And she traveled with Elmo. So she really enjoyed it. She always wanted to be in children's theater or do something in children's television, I should say. And she's a very avid theater goer. She goes to Broadway shows constantly with her husband and the kids. And they see everything. And I'd like to think that I gave them both that strong feeling for theater
and
the
respect.
Yeah.
What about your wife?
She's also very supportive, tremendously supportive. For a civilian, she really understands what I'm trying to do. She thinks I'm crazy, but, you know, she's right there, you know, and she's always been there to support me, and she's very honest. She'll say, this was really terrific work, and you really did, you know, something.
What is the most recent performance you have done? You're doing a monologue, I think.
Yes, I'm part of the American Renaissance Theatre Company, and I'm very proud of the fact that one of the writers, who's terrific, Mark Levine, wrote these fast food voices, monologues, and he wrote one especially for me about a Holocaust survivor, which I've been doing, and it's just a wonderful piece. I get such satisfaction out of doing it, and also out of being part of the American Renaissance Theatre Company, because they really do some wonderful pieces.
Tell me about where and how you perform this. In other words, the monologues are where? Where do you perform?
Okay, we're experimenting now. We just did one performance at the Dead Poet on Amsterdam Avenue and 82nd Street, a lunch, brunch kind of a thing, and it went really, really well. And a few weeks ago, this wine shop on 83rd Street and Columbus Avenue closed down the shop at 8 o'clock, had a little wine tasting, and four or five of us did our monologues there for about 60 people. It was standing room only, and it went extremely well. And we're going to be back again April 2nd. Mark Levine, who wrote this, plans on mounting all of these as a off-Broadway show at some point. So we're going to be doing a backers audition, and I'm very excited about it. When you create something new, I remember doing the Cemetery Club, a short film, which we took first place out at the Palm Beach International Film Festival. I had the lead, Edgar. And creating that role and working on it for 10 days gave me so much satisfaction. When I actually saw the piece on video, I didn't see myself. I just saw Edgar. And it's a very funny piece, but it's also deeply touching. So I felt so good about that. I said, actors are supposed to become. I don't even see Bernie, I see Edgar.
You became.
I became.
Tips for students.
You know, if you're going to do this business as a young student starting out, you need to have not only the passion, but you need the tools to become the actor that you want to be. And those tools include reading plays, reading, going to the theater, seeing as much as you can on Broadway, off Broadway, off Broadway, wherever you can, seeing films that are really good, looking at actors who really have the talent. For me, the greatest character actor of this century was Harry Dean Stanton, who just recently passed away. I think also back to students like Mel Johnson Jr., who I remember at 14 and coaching for the High School of Performing Arts and telling him, don't listen to your parents, Mel. Do this business. You can sing and dance. And another student of mine who's now in California, Yenny Alvarez, who's conquered the Latino field. She's with the William Morris Agency. Her first role was on Los Baltrano, I think is the name of it, in California. She works all the time. And I told her when she was 18 at Long Island City High School, I said, Yenny, you've got to do this business. You have it all. You have the looks. You have the talent. Stay with it. And she did. So stay with it. Don't let anything, stay focused. stay focused on the business. This is what you want to do. Look at actors who are really good and learn from them. Strive to come up to their level. And remember, read. Know who Arthur Miller is. The four greatest writers of our century are Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller, and August Wilson. And there are some very good writers in between. But those are the four that you must know their works thoroughly.
Bernie, when you had to be a waiter to support a family, what kept you up? What made you, gave you the strength to continue with your acting, with your performing?
Well, I believe in myself. And
you're also a religious person.
Oh, yeah.
That has helped you, hasn't it?
Oh, it has, yeah. I believe I was put here on earth to do something to make a difference in the world. And I think performers make a difference.
Bernie, I want to thank you for sharing chapters of your life. Congratulate you as a teacher, as a performer, and as a person. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Gilda. You know, I don't want to close by not thanking the Actors Fund. They were so helpful for me when I needed them, and I promised that if I ever was successful in any way, I would give back. And my wife and I do that by attending the Actors Fund benefits. We get the most expensive seats. And we do it because they were there for me. It meant a lot. I don't think there's any other profession that would do that for their own.
Thank you.